Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
A promotional fee has been paid by the sponsor of this program. For its editorial content, statements, views, and beliefs expressed by the sponsor do not reflect those of WOKV or Cox Media Group.
The Consumer Law Hour is brought to you by Farrah & Farrah.
The comments and opinions expressed on this radio program do not constitute legal advice and do not create an attorney-client relationship with you. If you have a legal problem, a formal consultation will be needed outside the confines of this radio program.
Helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing the things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Call 340-1045. That's 340-1045. Now, the Consumer Law Hour with Eddie and Chuck Farrah on News 1045 WOKV.
Well, good afternoon. A very happy Saturday to you. You are listening to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 1045 WOKV. My name is Tim Tompkins. Eddie and Chuck taking a much deserved week off. That is okay. We have two lawyers from Farrah and Farrah here in the studio with us. Sam, welcome.
Oh, well, thank you, Tim. Yeah. Great to be here.
And Megan.
Hey there. Thank you.
First time on air, guys?
It is for me.
Yeah. Yep. First time. So we'll see how this goes.
Well, we'll start this off with you, Sam. Tell me a little bit about yourself, what you do over at Farrah and Farrah.
Tim, I'm one of the litigation attorneys at Farrah and Farrah. So typically when I get a case, we're filing a lawsuit. We're getting it into the court system. At that point, probably our efforts to get it resolved amicably with the insurance company have not worked. It's one where maybe the insurance company is dragging their heels a little bit on getting it resolved, or they're just taking a hard line and not helping the person out. Mm-hmm. And what we do at that point is we've just got to file the lawsuit.
Okay. All right. How long have you been there?
It's a joke I used to say to my clients. I've only been with Farrah and Farrah for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Before that, I had a 17-year history working on kind of the other side of the road. I was a defense attorney, worked for several law firms here in town representing insurance companies and people who had been at fault in car accidents. I also, for a period of time, actually worked for one of the major insurance companies as one of their in-house lawyers.
No wonder they brought you over then.
Exactly. I try and tell my clients, I have the other team's playbook. I brought it with me. So usually it's very helpful in predicting and the big thing is letting the clients know what's going to happen so that there aren't the surprises that there often can be with litigation. We're able to kind of predict what the insurance company is going to do, the tactics they're going to take, and what our clients can expect along the road. Doesn't make it any easier, mm-hmm. But often that knowledge of hey, this is what they're doing, this is why they're doing it, can put folks at ease and they can kind of roll with some of the punches that the insurance companies often throw at them.
Well, Eddie and Chuck, they cover all their bases.
There you go.
The phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. Again, that's 904-340-1045. Megan.
Hey, I'm actually a pre-litigation attorney with Farrah and Farrah. So I basically get your case when you initially, if you're in an accident, slip and fall, car accident, any dog bite, any other type of injury claim, I get your case when it initially comes into the office. I make sure that we put the insurance companies on notice. We do any investigations that are required. And I try to get your case, I help, kind of guide and make sure that, you're getting better as you should. You're getting the treatment that you need to get better. Mm-hmm. And I put together a demand letter to send to the insurance companies. And I'm trying to get the case settled so that I don't have to send it to Sam.
Okay.
So that's really my job.
All right. Let's go ahead and start this off with the Bill. Bill over on the South Side, thank you so much for calling in to the Consumer Law Hour.
Hey, how are you?
Good, man. What's up?
I know you're having to deal with accidents, but I'm trying to get some advice. I had an issue where I build websites, and one of my websites encourages people to go to the FBI about issues other than 911 with JSO. And last year, I've had a FBI agent and a neighbor tell me that JSO had made some very dangerous and defamatory remarks about me to them, and I have proof of it. And I was wondering where a person can go other than filing for a restraining order or a cease and desist against JSO against doing these things to an individual.
Bill, this is Sam, and thanks for calling in. My question is, these folks that told you that JSO is making these comments, were they able to identify the specific officers, or was it kind of just a generic someone from JSO?
Well, the FBI made the call and told me that evidently it was an electronic written form or whatever. They told me that they had received it, and they told me that it was between me and JSO. I did file for an information from the FBI about it, so I could get it in writing, which is solid. And but they told me that they could neither confirm nor deny any conversation with JSO. Now, I was in an unsecure area, so possibly I could get this information since it was an unsecure area. And then right after that, I discussed this with a neighbor, and a neighbor proceeded to tell me about how she was stopped to talk to a JSO officer one day while she was working and discuss issues in our neighborhood. And while she was talking to him, he asked, "Oh, so you live across the street from me, so-and-so." And he proceeded to say things that are extremely dangerous that you would only hear from maybe a gang member trying to instigate people. And she did a video of what the man said and everything, and I have it, and she would testify. And then this FBI agent, it was in a matter of seconds of talking to him, brought this issue up front. "What's the deal with this?" And I just told him, I said, "Hey, you're looking at me. None of that is true. Judge me by what you see." Now, this is a serious issue, but people like me, I have to do everything on my own, and that's why I'm thinking about filing a cease and desist with a local court and try to get a judge to have them before a judge and put them under oath and say, what's this?
Yeah, Bill, and I'm going to tell you, I'm not really any sort of expert in that area of the law, but you know, it sounds like you're dealing with some serious issues.
This is some serious issues,
right?
And ongoing, and they are standing down and letting a lot of things happen, and it's a very serious issue. But see, people like me, and I was born and raised in Jacksonville, have no avenue because everywhere you go, they've already tried to label me. See what it is? They try to discredit me with the FBI. They try to discredit me with even my neighbors. Now, this is JSO. And I expect that of the gangs in this neighborhood. They are all over in Jacksonville. I expect that from them. And my site is out to help people, you know, get these things resolved. But nonetheless, that's what they did. And it's an ongoing issue. And what is your suggestion to go to where I could possibly have a judge analyze the situation? Because I got the facts. It's not just theory or less.
Yeah, I think that's probably your best course at this point, Bill, given what you're describing as the serious natures of these issues, is that you need a higher authority, if you will, to step in and
right.
Decide what's going on here. I think you're on the right track there.
Well, the public needs to know these things and see there's a lot of this going on a grand scale, but we don't have anybody to go to and discuss this like I am with you guys, and I appreciate you listening because I know you only handle accidents, and I respect you for that. But the public needs to hear these things, and this issue isn't going away. It's a serious issue unless it's confronted and it's brought out to the public and resolved. It goes on all the time.
Well, but we really do appreciate the phone call there. You are listening to Consumer Law Hour here on News 104.5 WOKV. Sam and Megan filling in for Eddie and Chuck. Chad, out by the beaches. Chad, thanks for calling in.
Hey, Chad.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Chad.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. Yes, ma'am. I have a question. It's a military divorce, uncontested, no alimony, no child support. It's been going on for 2 years, and we're just waiting for it to get resolved. And to be closed, been emailing and calling my lawyer. My wife has called her lawyer, and they've been, of course, every time we call or email or something gets done, we get charged more and more. And we're just waiting. Now my problem is my lawyer has actually closed his practice, and wondering what I need to do going forward to get this case closed.
Okay, Chad. Megan, I don't know if you have any experience in that line.
I can talk a little bit about that. I mean, I don't know at what point or what's been filed with the court. I mean, usually an uncontested divorce can be a quick and easy process if you're both on the same page and you don't have property or children to have to deal with. I would, if you feel like you do need representation, I would, you know, you're free and able to seek another attorney. You can always hire and fire an attorney. I don't know what type of, if you had paid a retainer or anything to the family law attorney, but that's what I would, those are my suggestions. That's what I can recommend.
Okay. It's a military, so it's, you know, cut and dry. That law has been established, and mm-hmm. what it is a percentage goes to the person that, and it's cut and dry and everything like that. But the only thing is, I've been to court, did all the interrogatories and everything like that. It's a case I went in front of a judge one time to try to get this done. But like I said, it's uncontested. Now, if I have to get another lawyer, I'll have to spend a bunch of money again. So I'm about $2,000 into it right now. And really, should be no holdup as far as being able to settle this, and I don't have the money to go get another lawyer or something like that. So, and it should be just a matter of filing the necessary paperwork. But now that my lawyer's closed his practice, all that money I spent, so I just don't know what to do going forward. I mean, there should be some kind of legal thing I could be able to do.
Yeah, I don't know if your question, Chad, is whether you have any recourse against your former attorney, or you know your intention is just to get the divorce or the disillusionment of their marriage wrapped up. I don't know what your relationship is with your wife, but you might be able to kind of go without an attorney. That, you know, sometimes that's a better option, especially if it's what you're telling us that the proceedings have all basically taken place. You just need to have a judge enter the order of disillusionment. If everything's been drafted up, or her lawyer can draft it up, and you guys can get down there in front of a judge and get it kind of finalized, because that's what I'm hearing from you, Chad, is you're just trying to close the door on this one.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And the relationship is fine. We're friendly and everything like that, my wife and I. And we're just waiting for that. Would it be, one last question, unethical or could I reach out to her law group and ask them, or is that not allowed?
Well, here's what I think they would tell you is when you initially called, they would not want to speak to you because officially, kind of in the paperwork, you're still represented. What you could do is tell them that you've ended that relationship with your former attorney or your attorney of record. They may know that already if what you're saying is he's closed his practice up. But kind of once you say I don't have an attorney anymore, then they're in my case, I've done that before where I've had folks that didn't have attorneys. It's called being represented pro se, which is, you're representing yourself. And you would be able to reach out to her attorneys and have a discussion and just say, hey, look, we're trying to get this thing done. And he would be able to do that, I would think.
Okay, I appreciate your time. Y'all have a great day.
All right, Chad, thank you.
We appreciate that phone call, Chad. The phone lines are open, 904-340-1045, 904-340-1045. You have Megan and Sam here filling in for Eddie and Chuck. My name is Tim Tompkins. The show is produced by Scott Kushner. Coming up, we're going to answer a question about a field sobriety test. Don't go anywhere. Enjoying this beautiful but hot Saturday pre-4th of July for you. This is the Consumer Law Hour brought to you by Farrah and Farrah. Chuck and Eddie taking a well-deserved day off today. It's okay. We do have Sam and Megan from Farrah and Farrah here filling in. The phone lines are open, 904-340-1045, 904-340-1045. Starting this off with Rodney over on the south side. Rodney, thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I just renewed a driver's license, and I might have had the old style. I don't know. Maybe this wasn't on there, but I didn't see it. At the bottom, along the bottom edge, it says operating a motor vehicle constitutes consent to any sobriety test required by law. I wasn't aware that that was the law per se. Because a friend of mine, he had been out and he had a couple of drinks and he was concerned when he got pulled over that he might be a little over the edge. He thought he could drive and he thought he was all right. So I don't advocate doing that by any means. However, he did refuse the test and he never was required to take it. So I wondered what the law really is on that, if you could explain it, if you know by chance.
Well, I can tell you that driving is a privilege. That's why it's called a license. You actually are in a contract with the state to be able to drive and operate a motor vehicle. When you enter into that contract, you agree to not drive under the influence of any type of, you know, any type of substance. So
right.
That is why if you breach that contract with the state, if you break that contract, they are able to, and you refuse to consent to what you've agreed to, they are able to revoke or suspend your license for a period of time.
I see. Okay. Well, that wasn't the case in his case. I just wondered how he might have gotten out of it. I mean, like I said, I don't advocate that by any means, doing that. But just when I got that license, I noticed that being on there, which I hadn't noticed on my old one. I didn't know if something had changed. Or if that has always been the case.
To my knowledge, it's always been the case. I don't know if you, Sam.
Yeah, Megan, I agree with you. I think that's always been the law in Florida. Now, printing it on the bottom of the driver's license, that may be something new. But that has always been the law in Florida that you're required to take that. Of course, you can refuse it. And the penalty, I believe, is suspension of your license mm-hmm. for 1 year if the police want to go down that road.
Gotcha. So it's kind of a decision they have to make based on what the evidence is, I guess. Sometimes they would go that way, sometimes not, I guess. Okay, well, I appreciate you taking the call. I was just curious about it when I saw that on my license. Thank you.
Thanks, Rodney. Yeah,
thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate that phone call. You guys want to expand further at all? Or?
Well, it's in some ways, it's one of those myths that you hear about, Tim. People amongst each other will say, oh, just refuse to take the test. And but Florida, you know, kind of figured out what to do with that. So they do have this statute in place, and the penalty is suspension of your license for 1 year. They may still get you for a DUI. You know, you mm-hmm. don't have to take a field sobriety test. That's just what I think they would consider their best proof of being impaired and not being in possession of your faculties to drive. But there are cases where they get folks for DUI that don't take a field sobriety test because of the circumstantial evidence that the police can gather at the scene. You know, if you're sitting there with, you know, 14 empties in the passenger seat and, you know, there's a strong smell of alcohol, well, they probably don't need you to do a field sobriety test, you know, if you wind up in the ditch. So that, you know, the kind of the myth of I just won't take the test and I won't get a DUI, I don't think that's true. And it could also throw you into the getting your license suspended just for failing to take the test. And I don't know whether they would put those two together or how that would work on the criminal side of things. But Florida has had this statute for as long as I've been aware of these type of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also if you get your license suspended for 1 year, you know, if you refuse one time, but there's enhanced penalties if you have multiple refusals. I believe you can even get at some point you can get your license revoked if you actually refuse to consent multiple times.
If you're a serial refuser.
But
is it an automatic DUI if you have an open container in your car?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
I wouldn't think so. I think because I have seen people that have been cited for an open container, but no DUI. If they can't, if they don't think that they can prove that you were, you know, inhibited in any way, I know I can just tell you from personal experience, I've seen on crash reports the situation where they wouldn't have gotten it. They didn't get a DUI,
yeah,
but they had open container.
I mean, I've left a dinner party before and had a half bottle of wine left and wanted to take it, but I was like, nah, I don't want to.
Right.
Well, that in that situation, what you want to do is what they do. You know, you can. A lot of restaurants now will allow you to take an open bottle, but they have to seal it in a certain way. It has to be sealed in a stapled bag.
Right.
That cannot, you know, you can't open it.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
Not.
Coming up, we have a look at your drive heading out to the beaches. We do have Megan and Sam filling in for Eddie and Chuck. A couple of phone calls coming up. 904-340-1045 if you want to get a call in. We'll be right back. Welcome to the Consumer Law Hour right here on News 104.5 WOKV. No Eddie, no Chuck today. They'll be back next week. But this week, we have Sam and Megan from Fair and Farrah filling in. My name is Tim Tompkins. Scott Kushner answering the phone lines behind the boards, keeping us honest. Those phone lines are open, 904-340-1045, 904-340-1045. Let's take this over to Paul, who has been waiting patiently. Paul, thanks for calling in.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, Paul, how are you today?
Hi there.
Hey, I just got a quick question about personal liability.
Yes, sir.
I purchased an umbrella policy, and I'm not quite sure my liability in the case of in regards to IRAs and 403Bs and 401Ks and the like. Are those at risk if I was ever to be sued by another individual?
Well, what would happen, Paul, is of course, depending on what type of suit they filed against you, what we typically see, what Megan and I work with so often is people who have been in automobile accidents and they have an automobile bodily injury policy, and then they have an umbrella policy on that. So we call it layers of coverage. So in a car situation, say you were unfortunately involved in an accident that was your fault and someone was suing you, your car insurance would be the first layer of coverage. And as long as the damages that the person was trying to collect was less than that, say you've got a $50,000 bodily injury coverage on your car, and the person sues you and or whatever, their damages are only $20,000, then your car insurance would pay all of that. If the damages were greater than the bodily injury coverage that you had, in our case, I'm kind of thrown out here, $50,000, then the next would most likely be your umbrella policy. And until all of that money had been paid out, your assets are protected. Your assets really only come into play when and if there's no more insurance coverage available for whatever someone is saying that you've done to them, if that makes sense to you.
Oh, yeah. And I had just understood some states, your retirement assets are still protected. So if we went beyond the $1 million umbrella policy, that those assets, the retirement assets, cannot be touched.
That is true to some extent, Paul, and it's you know, it has to do with each state has different collection laws, and in the collection laws it basically says which of your assets are at risk. So it would depend, of course, where the lawsuit was filed and what was going on with that.
What about the state of Florida if an accident happened in the state of Florida?
It does. There are certain protections on certain types of retirement accounts. I would have to see yours specifically. But that's something that your insurance adjuster probably could answer for you in light of him giving you this umbrella policy.
Actually, no. I asked her about it yesterday, and she said she didn't know.
Okay. Well, sorry about that.
So, yeah, I'm just trying to find out whether I need a larger umbrella policy, because I don't have a lot of assets not in my 401 or my IRAs, but with IRAs they can grow quite large as you get older.
Right, and you obviously want to protect those, and you're doing the right thing by thinking about that.
Okay, so what do I need to do to find out?
Florida. What you might want to do is considering discussing your situation with a financial planner, someone who would be able to look at your insurance policies and what coverage is available there and the assets you have. You know, you may have certain risks that your umbrella policy may not cover. You know, that all policies have certain exclusions to where they don't provide coverage. So that's something that someone probably needs to sit down with you and give you kind of a universal look at your whole situation. What are your assets? What insurance policies do you have in place? What exclusions are on those policies where, you know, you think you have this policy that's going to cover you, but if there's a certain exclusion there and whatever happens falls into one of those exclusions, you know, the insurance company will say, we're not going to provide any coverage under that scenario.
All right, I think I'll do that then. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Paul.
Appreciate the phone call. 904-340-1045. 904-340-1045. I want to take this over to a lawyer with Fair and Farrah who has been on multiple times. Brian, welcome on.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Megan. How are you guys today?
Hey, Brian. Great to hear from you, buddy.
I was listening to your last conversation, and I think it's a subject that you really should emphasize. I know Eddie and I have many, many times mentioned to people before about part of any financial planning absolutely has to include UM coverage. And we have had cases in which people, very prominent people, very successful people, have been underinsured for their coverage. And as a result, when the client's UM pays on those cases, they're going to get sued for it. We have I have a major one going on right now. And it's one of those things for any financial planning, if you don't have a certain level of UM coverage, and if you've got multiple vehicles in the family, you definitely won't affect the coverages, then they ought to really think about it. Because how many times do we all see cases in which we have to write them off because there's no coverage on the other side for people who have nothing, but also for people who are open to being sued because they have assets that go beyond their insurance coverage? Sam?
Absolutely, Brian. You know, that was one of the eye-opening things for me when I came to Farrah and Farrah 3 years ago. And, you know, within the first 6 months, I had a client that had been in a very bad accident. The person that had caused this accident had just minimal levels of coverage to the tune of about $10,000. The insurance company did the right thing and you know, sent the $10,000 over. But this was an individual who was dealing with hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of medical, just his medicals.
Right.
And he unfortunately had not opted to get the uninsured motorist coverage. As you explained, Brian, the great thing about uninsured motorist coverage is that's coverage that you have on your car or cars that protects you from getting hit by somebody who doesn't have any or doesn't have enough coverage.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely essential. It's one of the first things I know Megan, when she's meeting with folks, we always want to determine what coverage the other person, you know, the person at fault has. But just as critical is whether or not you have some of this uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage that can help you out.
Yeah, I always remind anybody that I talk to, you know, when I'm having that first conversation, I tell them if I find out that they don't have uninsured motorist coverage and they have no other option, I always reinforce the idea that that is the most important coverage that you can purchase for yourself, because you can't, I mean, you can't buy your life back. You know, you can protect your liability, but you can't get, if there's not enough medical coverage, if you're seriously injured, there's no other avenue for you. So
absolutely. If I had a dime every time I heard the expression full coverage when I talked to a client, I'd be a wealthy man. But I'm going to leave you with one final point to tell you about this case. One of the things people don't understand, especially with teenage children, is that between 16 and 18, they can't legally own the vehicle. So of the case I have right now, this man is very prominent, and he only had a 100, 300 policy. My client had significant UM that's going to pay and has, in fact, paid the 100,000. He owned the vehicle, and his son caused the crash. And people don't realize that when your child does that and you own the vehicle, it's called dangerous instrumentality, and you're on the hook. And it's a very, very large hook that is going to come in, because this is a collectible debt. Later on, the UM is going to pay me a significant amount of money, and they're going to go after this person, and they're going to be on the hook for exactly what they paid to me. So I really emphasize to people out there, if you don't understand it, you really need to, because it puts you in really a very significant amount of harm's way, both as on the side of having a child drive a car under dangerous instrumentality and not having UM coverage in place for when they get injured. And we see this all the time, and that's just something I thought would be, based on the last caller, would be emphasized to people so they understand the importance of it.
Absolutely, Brian. One of the stories I tell folks when I'm explaining this concept of the dangerous instrumentality doctrine was a case I handled when I was working for the insurance company. A woman here in town had gotten into an accident, and it was clearly her fault. And at that time, I was representing the at-fault drivers. When the lawsuit got filed, what the plaintiff's attorney had discovered was that the car she was driving was owned by her on the title. It was in her name, as well as her ex-husband's name. They had been divorced for about 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. and they had just never gotten the title to the car changed.
Yep.
And so I was put in the position of having to call this gentleman up, and you know, he had moved away, remarried, had reestablished himself in a new life in South Carolina, and I had to explain to him, well, you're being sued for an automobile accident that unfortunately your ex-wife got into down here in Jacksonville. So that was not a fun conversation.
Absolutely not, but we see it all the time. You guys are doing great. I'll let you go. It was a real pleasure.
Always a pleasure with you, Brian.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tell you what, Brian has a good radio voice. I tell you what, he needs to do a lot of spots for Farrah and Farrah. Eddie and Chuck, if you're listening, I'm telling you, get Brian on. Taking this over to Ken over on the north side. Ken, thanks for waiting so patiently.
No problem.
Ken, what can we do for you this morning?
I am currently being sued and have a garnishment against me, and I'm on disability, and I work a part-time job making $10 an hour. And both of these lawsuits, they filed under false pretenses because these charges, one was a credit union that I co-signed, another was a credit card, and they're all over 15 years old. But they just got the judgment within the last year, from what I understand. I wasn't even aware I was supposed to be in court, and then all of a sudden my bosses give me this letter saying I'm being my wages are being garnished by two companies.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about that, Ken. Sorry to hear about your disability. That sounds like something that you probably need to get somebody to help you out with, particularly if they're already into the garnishment stage. They've got a judgment, and there's some heavy lifting to be done on the legal end of things to, if what you're telling us is true, to get that turned back so that they're not able to garnish these wages and collect these debts that may be out of date.
Right, because I looked it up and found out that they can't sue for anything on a credit card over four and anything on a signed loan after 5 years. But yet these are about 15 years old and they did it. Is there any way to get a vacated judgment and file charges against the attorneys for falsifying evidence to a court to obtain these garnishment orders?
Well, kind of two different things. One, can you get the judgment overturned? There's always avenues of appeal if that's the proper way. You might want to contact the Jacksonville Area Legal Aid. They're very often able to counsel you or to in some cases get some representation for you if you've been wronged in the way that you're describing. As far as claims against attorney, that kind of goes into something with the bar. If there's things that attorneys that have done that are unethical, there are avenues that you can pursue on that end through the Florida bar.
Okay.
And I do have that phone number for you if you want to take it down for Jacksonville Legal Aid.
I've already talked to them about the first one.
Okay.
And they couldn't. They said they already had a judgment against me, so they couldn't do anything about it right now.
Okay, Ken. Well, yeah, if you've already taken that step, that would have been the first thing for you. I'm not aware of what your next step would be, but I would encourage you to go back down to the folks at Jacksonville Legal Aid and discuss it further with them. They can, most of the time, at least point you in the right direction where you need to go to get some relief.
Okay, I'll try that again then.
All right. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate that phone call. We have one final segment of the Consumer Law Hour today. It's gone by very fast. We do have Sam and Megan here in the studio for Eddie and Chuck. Scott Kushner producing the show. A couple of phone calls left. We'll try to get to them all. Be back. Megan and Sam here filling in for Eddie and Chuck, the final segment of today's Consumer Law Hour. We have several phone calls to get through, so we'll try and go through these as quickly as possible to get to all of you guys. Starting this off with Ronald down in Callahan. Ronald, thanks for calling in.
Hey. Yeah. Around February, we had that hard freeze and rain, and I had a bunch of limbs in the yard that had to be cut off. So I fell off a ladder, and I hurt my left shoulder. And I've had it done before. I know it's a rotator cuff. But anyway, I'm 67, and the only insurance I have was that Medicare, B and A, and all that garbage. I thought, well, I went to the doctor, and they told me that I didn't have it, that I had canceled it. So I went home and called them. I was on the phone about 3 hours. They get you on a 50-minute wait, and then when your 50 minutes is up, they hang up on you, call them back. So I finally got the lady, and she said that the problem was I had canceled it because I moved to Costa Rica. Well, I've been living in the same place for over 50 years. So she told me I had to go to the Social Security place. So I went over there and stayed about 4 hours, and the guy said it would be about 30 days. Well, I waited about 3 months, and I went back, and I got another guy, and he told me that it was the Social Security place's fault that they screwed up, that somebody else went to Costa Rica, and he had it canceled. So I've been trying to get that thing fixed where I can go get my shoulder looked at, but I got a letter today that says it'll be January before they have a sign-up again. So I was wondering if there was any gosh almighty thing I could do. My shoulder's killing me, and I can't sleep or nothing, but I can't get any relief from them people. So I was wondering if there was anything I could do.
Well, Ronald, I certainly feel badly for you. I know, you know, Medicare has that annual sign-up. I think we're getting ready to come into the open enrollment period in the fall, and typically exactly what they're telling you is it kind of kicks in January. In the meantime, I think you need to get someone to explain to you why your coverage was canceled.
They said he just made a mistake. He said somebody just put the wrong number in when they did it.
Then they should have that.
I still get my check at the end of the month. It still goes to the same address. I just got them out. I don't understand how somebody can screw it up so fast and take a year to fix it.
Right. That sounds like the source of what's going on with you. If you can get somebody to show you where that happened and they can say, oops, you know, it was our mistake, then your coverage should be put back in place is what I would think. It seems like the simple answer, doesn't it, Ron? I think you probably need to just go down to that Social Security office and get in front of somebody and have them explain to you what happened and how they're going to fix it for you.
Well, I've already done it twice.
Yeah.
And they told me within 30 days, and the last guy told me that it was their fault. And he acted like he would fix it, you know, but I hadn't got anything done. So I was wondering if there's any other recourse I could take.
Yeah, just keep following up with him, buddy.
Thank you.
All right, Ron.
All right, bye.
Megan, Sam, good job, guys.
Thanks. This was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks for having us.
Sure. The first time you're on air, you get a full hour. Most people only get a few minutes. Kind of break the waters. But no, you guys nailed it. Eddie and Chuck back next weekend. Thanks so much to Scott Kushner producing the show for us. We have a look at your drive heading out to the beaches. Jacob Pickering in the WOKV Traffic Center and your news update coming up next.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.